You know, the world right now is a really unsettled place. And for such a time as this, women play a most important role in history as peacemakers. The goal of Ladies of Liberty Sound Off is to affect the lives of women in an empowering way through discussion of important issues of the day. So, are you ready? The Ladies of Liberty are ready to sound off.
Ladies, I have to share. This morning, I got up and was hungry, so I made myself some avocado toast. Not a millennial, but I'm enjoying avocado toast like a young person. But then I tuned in to the news as I'm enjoying my breakfast and my half orange on kind of a leisurely early morning. And I saw the news about Putin invading Ukraine. And I saw some footage of a young woman, probably in her 30s, a mother, a wife, surrounded by hundreds of people who were sardined like into a subway, all underground, because they felt that was the safest place to be. She was in tears. She was being interviewed, and the interviewer was asking her, what was it like when you heard the first bomb go off this morning at 5 o'clock in the morning? And through tears, she said, I didn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. I thought maybe somebody was just shooting off firecrackers or some sort of explosive early in the morning, construction. She said, none of us believed that this would actually happen, and it's here. And it appears to have, I don't want to say surprised, because I don't think it was a surprise, but everybody seems to be in shock. And I don't have that concern, yet we're able, through modern technology, to watch it unfolding. And it made my heart so heavy. I just... I'm really taken today with the fact that there are so many people suffering under a regime that appears to be evil, messed up, crazy, very reminiscent of a world war. And we've had two, and I never imagined that there would even be casual conversation about a third. Just didn't think that was, I figured by the time we would have a third world war, that would be it. We would be done and everybody just pushes a button and the world explodes. But this is very different from the 1930s and 40s, and things are being done differently. And sadly, in some ways it's worse because of technology and because of the things that we're capable of. Just the fact that we're capable of killing other human beings is sickening anyway. But it was very heavy and remains heavy for me today. It's very sad that negotiations broke down, conversations broke down. And how do you deal with a madman?
How do you deal with a madman is the question. You know, I feel like while I was watching this, it just makes me think that, you know, I got a little, I was like, how could Biden have even said last week or so, he said, you know, well, if it's a minor incursion, you know, we'll, you know, maybe that'll be okay, or kind of a thing. But there's no such thing as a minor incursion. And this is a madman who is trying to take over the world. And it sounds like trying to recreate the former Soviet Union. And is he going into Romania? And is he going to take Poland? And is he going to go through, you know, Eastern Europe one by one? And is that what we're looking at? And yeah, you know, how, despite everything that goes on in this country, you know, I am pretty darn thankful that we live here. And, you know, we are extraordinarily privileged that we do have that sort of security here. Although, you know, again, who knows? It sounds like Putin is next is going to be, you know, some sort of cyber attack on us. You know, are we going to end up being attacked? You know, I don't think anything is off the table at this point. And you're 100% right, Becky. We are so lucky. And it does make you realize how people in this world have to, you know, the fact that they have to worry about their survival on a daily basis while we're eating our avocado toast makes you think it's not fair. But how did they get here? How did they get there? How did we allow that to happen in the first place is, you know, what I'm questioning.
Well, they've been there. I mean, the Ukraine and some other areas there used to be part of Russia, and they, you know, wanted their independence, and Russia has always wanted them to be part of their motherland again. I mean, this has been ongoing for a very long time. And under President Trump, they would never try it because he would take very swift action and there would be big consequences. But under Joe Biden, they feel emboldened to take the action now. And I believe that President Xi is watching and he's going to take action against Taiwan now while Biden is president, because the opportunity is there to do this while we have a rather impotent president. So what's our consequences besides the consequences to the people in Ukraine, which I do want to talk about? But here, you know, all of our retirement funds have just taken a big hit. And our gas prices are going to be going up again. They just went to the highest price in a number of years after this invasion. And things that we get from Russia, like fertilizer, you know, that's going to be off the table. If we get hit with cyber attacks, that's going to cause a problem. Bitcoin lost a huge amount of money upon this invasion. And any global companies that had offices in Ukraine are now affected because they are closing their offices. So there are going to be a lot of consequences to us, and it's going to hit us in the pocketbook, just like all these immigrants flowing over the border is hitting us in the pocket, just like the closure of our pipeline. So it's interesting that through all of this, Biden gave Russia and Putin permission to have their pipeline, which piped all this oil into Europe and Germany, especially, which makes them millions and billions of dollars in Russia, yet closed our pipeline here, especially here in Texas. So the first thing Biden should be doing, in my opinion, for Americans is reopening our pipeline. Because we need to have our oil. And when Russia supplies about 10% of the oil to the world, that's going to affect all of us at the pump. And who does that hurt? It hurts the lower and middle class, who are the ones who are commuting to their jobs. The people that have a lot of money can afford the increase, but the everyday American cannot afford that increase. They have to take something else out of their budget. And what would that be? I mean, do they take food off their table? Do they stop buying their kids new shoes? Do they stop getting medical care? I mean, we need to think about all the consequences of these things. So we need our pipeline reopened and get us back to energy independence as President Trump had us, so that we are not so affected by this war. And then just the human consequences, as you, Becky, and you, Elisa, were talking about. I mean, it's heartbreaking to watch these people, and, you know, their whole lives are disrupted. They have buildings that are getting shelled at this point, and people that are evacuating, the roads are just full, completely full of cars of people trying to get out. I don't know, you know, I was talking to somebody earlier today, and I said, why didn't they get out before? They said, because there was very mixed messages as to if this was really going to happen. So, you know, they were hopeful that it wasn't going to happen and diplomacy would win out. But, you know, with Putin, that's not generally the case.
That's what I saw in the interview today. The person interviewing this young woman said, were you surprised? Or she said they were surprised because they did not believe that it was going to happen. The leader of the Ukraine is an ex-comedian turned politician.
Zelensky.
Yes.
He's a president.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, president. Okay, thank you. And according to what I read, they made it sound like he just wasn't prepared this past year or two in his diplomacy with Putin, he really wasn't prepared to handle something like this. So I think they're faulting some leadership or leadership abilities. And he, because of the message that he would send to the people of the Ukraine, in that it's really not going to happen. It's not going to happen. You got to trust me. You got to believe me. We're going to be able to work this out. And I liken this to a movie that I just watched. And I can't remember, Linda, if we had this in conversation last time. My husband and I just watched a movie called The Edge of War. And it's a 2021 movie about World War II. And the year...
The one with Jeremy Irons, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Really, really good movie. Mm-hmm. And it has made me think. It's been 2 weeks since we've seen it, and I continue to think on it, because the plans that Hitler had made that no one else was aware of, and it sort of sounds very similar to this case, the plans that Putin has for the Ukraine, the people of Ukraine are not aware of. I think it's so much deeper, more sinister, more awful than what people expected or thought. But it seems that there's the opportunity for it to be so far reaching. And I don't know to what degree the rest of Europe will become involved, or if we will become involved. And it feels a little surreal. I mean, I obviously didn't live through World War II. My parents did as children, and my grandparents, and that, you know, having known them very well, you could see the emotional scars that war would leave on a person as far as saving money, how they saved their money, how they spent their money, with lots of caution and never really being that certain about the future. And I think our generation, I am the tail end of the baby boomers. Like, I think the last person on the list, but that generation, we didn't really even know Vietnam. We were children. The generation after me knows nothing about those difficult times. And I think America, the young America, doesn't really have a clue about what is happening there and what war really means. And they're going to come to learn, because I think this will affect us with, like you mentioned, Linda, if there's possible cyber attacks. And that's where the younger generation is at with all the technology, the price of gas, the price for food. We're already seeing increases there. And I think this is going to be educational, sad, tragic. I'm praying that there's a better ending to what we're all thinking.
I don't know. It looks pretty bad. And,
it does.
You know, I mean, Vladimir Putin threatened consequences you have never seen to any country that interferes in Ukraine, while the president of Ukraine said, we will defend ourselves. So basically, Putin is saying that anybody who interferes in this is going to have consequences you've never seen. So he's really threatening the whole world. Now, mm-hmm. The United States just sent 7,000 more troops to Germany. We're not helping in Ukraine with troops, and we should have been sending them weaponry some time ago, but we didn't do that. And that was a problem under the Obama administration, where they gave them blankets and things when they were threatened with invasion at that time. They gave them blankets, not arms. So that's not going to help them a lot right now. But so we're sending troops over to Germany to bolster NATO, but the Ukraine is not part of NATO. So NATO is not stepping in to help them defend themselves at this point. So there's a lot of questions here. You know, Putin wants to reestablish the Soviet Union, period. That is his goal. That's been his goal forever. And he sees a way to accomplish it under a weak president in the United States. So, I mean, I just feel so badly that people who voted in the last election that voted for Joe Biden never thought of all of these things. And I mean, these are the consequences of not knowing the person for whom you are casting your vote. It's such a big deal to me that Biden's history, everything that you could possibly research about this career politician would lead you to the conclusion of where we are today. But people didn't see that. They saw Trump hatred, and the world is forever changed now because of that vote, because of, well, I believe fraud in the election. That's my belief. But whether you believe that or not, either way, the people that voted for him, that for which he's in office, you know, it just wasn't a great decision to nominate him as our president, or nominate him as the candidate for president, and then to vote for him. We need strong leaders in this country, because as America goes, so goes the world. And this is not over, ladies. I absolutely believe that we are going to see an invasion of Taiwan as well, because these leaders see an opportunity that they didn't have, you know, in the 4 years previous to Joe Biden, and that they're afraid that they won't have again because Joe Biden is going to get voted out. So now is their time.
I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, we are supplying Ukraine with weapons. In Politico.
Now we are, Becky. Now we are. We weren't under Obama.
Oh, no, but we are now.
Yes.
So that threat pertains to us.
You know, I look at this thing almost like history repeating itself. Last weekend, I spent an entire afternoon at the U.S. Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. And it walks you through the entire pre-World War II, pre-Hitler, and how Hitler actually was able to grasp the power that he got. And this is what we're seeing now is really almost identical to what's going on there. And, you know, Putin is not going to accumulate 150,000 and then 200,000 troops along the border of Ukraine and then just say, okay, fine, I'll just bring everybody home. There's no way. I mean, why would anybody expect that to happen? So I think it was just sort of similar in the sense that the people of Germany could not even imagine that somebody like Hitler would just take over Europe like he did. And many of those people, the Jewish people especially, couldn't believe it. They just were like, no, this is never going to happen. And they just stayed and they didn't get out when they had the opportunity to get out. Because who could ever imagine that what Hitler would do what he did? I think the same thing of Putin. Who could ever imagine that Putin's going to take over the entire Ukraine? So the Ukrainian people are probably like, that's never going to happen. There's no way. You can't even blame them for thinking that. But when you're thinking about Putin and someone like Hitler, you know, you don't put things like that, you know, you don't take that lightly. And when he says he wants to return to the original Soviet Union, that's no joke. That's to be taken seriously. So I'm not surprised at all that he amassed those troops at the Ukrainian border and that he went forward with it. That didn't surprise me in the slightest that it actually happened. It's just shocking when you actually see it happen, but it certainly didn't come as a surprise. I would have been more surprised if Putin had said, okay, everybody go home. We're going to bring them home. You know, all right, I'll just go with diplomacy now and I'm going to bring my troops home. I would have been much more shocked at that happening.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I want to, just as a side there, I've never been to that Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., and I do plan on going to it, but I have been to the one in Germany, the Hall of Remembrance, and it's just so striking. And all over Europe, in the places that were affected, so in Germany and in Holland, and Austria, you know, there are so many reminders of what happened there. And there's a lot of places that, you know, there's still where a bomb fell there, everything is left as it was. So all the debris is still there. And I mean, you can really see all through that area of Europe, the absolute devastation caused by Hitler and then also caused by the war. And then when you're in, say, Amsterdam, you can see they have little brass plaques in front of the homes in these beautiful little towns. And there's just little cobblestone streets, and the houses are, they're all connected along the street. And, you know, so people, they live there, and they put these little brass plaques on the street right in front. And this is where, you know, a person's name is on that plaque, was taken out and killed by the Germans. And it's just so tragic. And they want to remember that, and they want to never forget that. Where in America, we're erasing our history. They want to keep their history so that people understand that this can't happen again. And here we are in a very like situation where people are dying or going to be dying because of this invasion. And it's just absolutely tragic, you know, for what? For some land? I mean, gosh, it is so heartbreaking, because we all only get that one life, and you don't want to spend it, you know, being taken over by somebody and having your life dictated by somebody. I mean, we here in America, we just can't conceive of what is really happening, because so many of us were not here for World War II. We're not here for those wars. And we don't remember because our schools don't teach it. So all of the people that are a little bit too young to remember those times are oblivious to the absolute devastation in these people's lives. And they need to be looking at, you know, what's going to be coming this way. And my last question is, who is going to defend us in this country with a generation of kids that don't know how absolutely exceptional America is? Who is going to defend us and step up for America and our values when we're losing our own values? I mean, there's just so much to this that's very, very concerning to me.
That's a dire problem. I really believe that's a dire problem. And to me, it started with Obama and his apology tour. And as soon as he took office, he decided he's going to Europe and he's going to meet with every world leader and he's going to apologize for everything that we've done. I was so appalled by that. I got to tell you, I was like, what planet are we on? I mean, what is going on here? That can't be. Talk about an exceptional country. This country was built on exceptionalism. And yeah. You know, sweat and hard work and tears and, you know, values and family and all kinds of all the things that you want in this world. And again, you know, to go back to that Holocaust Museum, by the way, I highly recommend a visit there. It is quite the sobering experience when you see what happened. You know, Hitler started his whole campaign. He didn't just go in and start killing people. It was a very systematic plan that he had in mind. And he started with freedom of speech. And he started with shutting people down if they didn't agree with him. And it was my husband and I were saying, this is exactly what's going on in this country right now with the cancel culture. If they don't like what you say, shut you down. That's it. You're done. So there's no room for any disagreement. And all that does is it forces people to go along with the people who are either in power or think they're in power or want to be in power. And it's quite frightening when you see that this, what happened during World War II, was not so long ago. I mean, yes, most of the people, most of us, we were not, you know, we were either children or, you know, people younger than us were not alive and really aren't learning about the impact that that had on the world. But it really was not that long ago. It was, you know, a generation ago, and that's that. And it could so easily happen again. It's really scary.
It is very scary. And I am of that age where I knew my grandparents very well. And I knew my great grandmother, which for some reason because of what's happening right now, I've been digging into her history a little to find out more about the world. She was born in 1893 and born in what I think is one of the most tremendous eras. 1893 to 1988. She was about 93 or 94 when she passed, going from no warm or in-home running water. She would get her water from outside, outhouse, no airplanes, no vehicles, no telephones. By the time she was 80, she was flying to Florida. She had phone, I mean, all of our modern conveniences. But the way she went through the wars, and she went through the most difficult times in America, and I knew her. And so all that to say, Elisa, is that it hasn't been that far removed. And thankfully, those stories have at least gotten passed down to our generation. They need to keep being told, and quickly, because change looks like it's very much in the air somehow. I'm not sure to what extent, but there's no question there will be some change. And I think I had texted you, Linda, some of the things that we were talking about here is the concern that I have for who will defend us. Because there seems to be a casualness about being an American for certain generations. And that really bothers me. There's no, I don't know if pride's the right word, but there doesn't seem to be any pride in our nation. It's just what they can get out of. It's me, me, me. It's the me generation. And we can't think that way. That's not a mindset that will protect and serve, mostly serve.
It's interesting. You're absolutely right there that, gosh, it's such a problem because we've not been teaching in our schools our history and world history and about the Holocaust. In fact, our schools have been doing everything not to teach those, and they've been rewriting history and taking down our statues of our history and teaching a different version and teaching that America is an oppressor instead of how exceptional we are. These are people that have not traveled to these other countries and seen the history that is true and how it's represented. The one thing I love about so many places in Europe is that they honor their history, and I love their sense of pride. Yeah. You know, when they sing their national anthems, every single person stands up and belts it out. You know, we sing our national anthem. In fact, they're thinking about taking it down and saying it's racist and not using our national anthem anymore. Oh, I mean, we just are in this very strange place in our nation's history where we don't appreciate what we have, and we're not going to appreciate it, I guess, until we lose it. But for those of us that have been around a while, it's very scary. And we understand how great this country is. And I'm so saddened and I'm so concerned about the administration that we have that is allowing all these terrorists and predators coming over our border and all the drugs. And what is that doing to the youth that would be the people that would have to serve in the military to protect us? That's terrifying to me.
It's really sad. You know, I also see at any time I have gone, I feel like almost any time I've gone out of the country and you go to another country, you see the national pride and you people display the flags of their country. And they're always, you know, you just see that they, there's none of this, like, you know, country bashing, if that's what you want to call, I don't even know what to call it, but, and it's so upsetting. Like I, you know, the question that we were talking about early, just a few minutes ago about who's going to defend us. I don't know the answer to that. You know, I look at like the Israeli model and how they have a mandatory military service for before kids go to college. You know, as soon as they're 17 or 18 years old, the boys have to spend 3 years in the army and the girls have to spend a minimum, you know, minimum of two. Some choose to do it longer. But when those kids are 17, 18, 19 years old, and when you look at what they're doing and you look at what our 17, 18 and 19 year olds are doing and what we're teaching our teenagers, it is so appalling and almost embarrassing. And, you know, those kids over there, they are adults by the time they are 18 years old. Our kids are, you know, our kids are like maybe, you know, maybe going to college, you know, going to frat parties, drinking, you know, it's all about kind of like partying and all that stuff. And, you know, that, I don't think that's so good. I don't think that's so good.
Don't miss an episode of the Ladies of Liberty Sound Off. Subscribe to the podcast. And for the latest news and inspiration, join us back at AmericaOutloud.com.
It's time to rethink COVID disinfection. A study by Harvard, Drexel, and Virginia Tech concluded, we don't have a single documented case of COVID transmission through surfaces. The reality is that COVID spreads mainly through the air. Shared air is the problem, not shared surfaces. The solution is the Genesis Fogger, which uses natural HOCl to disinfect both air and surfaces simultaneously. It's perfect for home or business. NIH says HOCl may well be the disinfectant of choice for coronaviruses. There's nothing more natural or more effective. Genesis fogs at the precise particle size to combat COVID and other harmful pathogens. It's what's missing from your disinfecting protocol. Visit genesisfogger.com. America Out Loud listeners receive a 15% discount with promo code OUTLOUD at genesisfogger.com/outloud.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back to Ladies of Liberty Sound Off, and I'm Linda Martinelli. I'd like to introduce my co-host today. Today we have Becky Kolminen, and Becky is a voice talent. She is a voiceover artist, and I love her to pieces. She has a unique view of life that always inspires me, and you can hear Becky's voiceover talent right on our America Out Loud site and right on our Ladies of Liberty show at the beginning and end of our show and during the middle of our show. So you hear Becky talking there. And we also have Elisa Akrongold. Elisa is a multi-talented woman. She is from Connecticut, and she's also a dear friend. Elisa was a television producer. Is that right, Elisa? Producer?
That's correct. Yep.
Okay, got it. And she's worked on some shows that we would all know. But in her current life, besides being a mom, and as we all are, and a wife, and she is a weight loss coach extraordinaire. And as I always say with Alisa, Alisa has helped my husband and I lose just a tremendous amount of our excess weight, and we feel great and we look great. And, you know, I just can't thank somebody like Alisa enough. So, and I'm Linda Martinelli. I am a business owner and also the host right here on America Out Loud of Talking While Married, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every evening with my husband, a forensic criminologist, Dr. Ron Martinelli. So please join us there as well. So ladies, we were talking about some very serious issues with our country and with Ukraine. And, you know, we're talking about the youth in our country and how they really don't know, you know, the value of America, the American exceptionalism, the kind of the shining, what was it that Ronald Reagan said? How did he put it? The city on a shining hill, or the shining city on the hill? I mean, that is America. And we kind of seem to be getting away from that with all of the talk that our kids learn in schools and in colleges about how horrible we are, how oppressive we are, how racist we are. I just really beg to differ. And I want to talk about what are things that can make that difference in our country and our world. And it's us. It's moms. Because as women go, so go the men. That's just life. That's how life goes. Men can be the warriors and they can be out there doing the fighting, but they're doing it for us, the women. And we are the ones who are the nurturers, and we are the ones who can make the changes in America and in life. You know, at some point, we went to the direction of, well, we want our own jobs and we want our own you know, sexual freedoms, and we want all of these things that, you know, are traditionally male, and we got them. And I'm not so sure it did us all a lot of good, and I'm not sure it did our children good. There are great aspects of it. As a mom that has worked for my whole time of raising my kids, you know, I was able to do both, and I'm sure that there was some things lost on both sides, both for my kids and both for my jobs and for myself as well. But I think the greatest job that we can do is to be good moms and raise the next generation. And there are some people that I just was reading about that I find so absolutely fascinating. Becky and Alisa, you take Chicago, which is just an area that has had horrible gang problems and so many murders. It's absolutely just insane. And people can look those up every single day on a site called heyjackass.com. It sounds crazy, but that's what it's called. And it's a great site. And they keep all the totals and statistics of who's shooting who in Chicago every single day. There is a mom in Chicago who has kept her son on the path to success, despite all of the obstacles that are in Chicago. And there was an article about her. There's some articles that are every day called Rooftop Revelations. There's a man he's a pastor, Corey Brooks, that he talks about Chicago and trying to make it better. And you know, one of the things that he said was that race was the least of his community's problems. We hear all the time that race is the problem. And he's saying it's not the problem. It's not the root of poverty or illiteracy and violence. And what is the solution is the parents and how they're raising their kids. That these little spongy minds of our kids can understand, you know, that if the mom makes them do their homework and makes them talk respectfully and helps them to not be in gangs and those things, those kids will be successful. And that's what this article is about. I hope you both read it and have some comments on it.
Oh, I definitely read it. And if you ask me, the mom is the heart of the home every day of the week, no matter what era we're living in, no matter what year we are, no matter what city you live in, no matter what your race is, no matter what, the mom is the heart of the home. And if that mom is showing her kids that she cares and she has high expectations for them and she is their biggest fan and 100% behind them, then that kid will perform and that kid will grow up and know that, you know, will have the desire, hopefully, you know, to not to please his mom, but to see that, you know, that his hard work is going to mean success for him in his life. And I think, you know, dads are critical, of course. You know, if you ask me, I mean, my opinion is that that kids need two parents in the home, a mom and a dad. But, you know, even if you just have a single parent household, whoever is that mom in the house, that is, you're taking on an enormous responsibility. You're responsible for our future.
You know, the number of single moms in America make up just over 80% of single parent homes. That's a lot. 80%, that's huge. And I've been very blessed to have a mother and a father, a family that has stayed together through incredible things. I'll write a book and it'll be made into a movie later. Everybody can watch. But I know just from what I would have to say, my very comfortable, cushy life, I know how important a mom is with regard to infusing values into her children, no matter what the surroundings are. So if you take that mom in a situation where life on a daily basis is not steady and uncertain and volatile, to the degree of where you send your kids out to school or just out of the house in the evenings and you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, the threat of violence in certain areas of Chicago and in other places is beyond what I can imagine. I can't even begin to know that except from what I've read and heard, because that's not been part of my life. It's terrifying. So a mother to take that on and make sure that her children are going to see things differently so that they won't want to join the gangs and they won't live a life of anger or fear. And I don't know how you do that, but.
You know what she said, Becky? Yeah. She said that she raised her son, you know, even though she had to work because she was a single mom, that she raised him with love and stayed present no matter what the challenges. And there's the key. We're not putting our kids in front of the TV or in front of, you know, the cell phone or the video games to babysit them. She's staying involved. And she kept setting the bar higher. And when he wanted to do things like, you know, Netflix or fool around with something else, she said, no, you have to do your work. Her son, who's a junior at Providence St. Mel's School, scored a perfect score of 36 on the ACT test. Only 0.3% of all test takers score that. And, you know, this pastor asked her how she did that in an area where there are a lot of single moms and kids tend to get into gangs. And she gave her son the credit. She said, it's his accomplishment. But the pastor said, no, it's yours too. And she said that she enforces that her son has to do his work. You know, he can't sleep in. He can't, you know, play around and get off the phone and FaceTime and all those things. And she just keeps redirecting him to do the things he's supposed to do. She said, stay on him. And that's so true. And I think that, you know, single moms, especially single moms who have to work, which most of them do, they're tired too, right? They want to do something else. They don't want to always have to be arguing with their kids, but that's the solution, is that we have to put in that time and we have to redirect them to things that are important so that their life can be, you know, rewarding and fulfilling for them as well. And that they don't get grabbed up into gangs and you know, guns and drugs and all different things. It's not easy. And not just in Chicago, anywhere. We're talking anywhere. And it's not just single moms either. It's all moms.
And it's parenting. I mean, on a very basic level, it's parenting. I see today lots of parents just let their young kids play on their iPads or the phones while mom is talking on another phone or this or that. And I know we need escape, because being a mom, especially of a toddler, let's say, or multiple kids that are all toddler age or a range, that wears on a mind, body, and soul. You do need a break at some point, but there seems to be a new mom thing where kids have too much time and their parent isn't present.
I think that's so, being present to me is like the most important thing. You know, I try really hard whenever one of my kids walks in the room, or if I pick them up from school or whatever, I try, if I'm on the phone with somebody or I'm talking to somebody, I hang up the phone immediately and I try to focus on them and, you know, have a conversation with them. I always feel very conscious when, you know, one of my kids is sitting in the room with me and I'm like on the phone, I'm like, you know, scrolling, or I'm doing emails or whatever it is that I'm doing on the phone, work-related or non-work-related. I feel very self-conscious about that. And I try to be present for them and to make conversation with them and to find out what's going on. It's not always easy with kids. You know, they often don't want to talk to you. They don't want to share. You know, I try to come up with some little tricks to make them think that I'm not really paying attention, but I really am, you know, because they don't really want you to be so attentive to them sometimes. But, you know, whatever it is that makes your children think that you are interested in them and that you care about them and that you're there for them and you want to help them. And, you know, I feel like being present is the single most important thing, no matter where you live. Doesn't matter if you're in the inner city in Chicago or not. Doesn't matter, you know, if you're rich, poor, middle class, whatever. I think kids need to know that their parents are there for them and that they want to be there for them and that they have expectations of them. And yes, they are expected to get that work done. And if the work is not done, then something else is going to give. You know, it's almost like you push them really hard with on one hand, and you push them away really hard with on one hand, and on the other hand, you draw them in. You know, it's a constant balance of making sure that they know that, you know, you're watching, but at the same time, you love them and you're there and you're going to support them.
Hear, hear. That was perfect. That's exactly right. My daughter, who's graduating with a communications degree, actually has come a long way from her high school days of having her face be buried in her phone and us nagging on her to not spend so much screen time. But she now, if for any reason I've been caught on my phone, if she's trying to share something with me or I'm not paying attention, she's on it. And she will say, "Mom, can you just be present with me for just a minute?" And if I'm standing there listening to her, because part of that being present also includes just listening as a mom, which is really hard for me to do sometimes. If I'm standing there with my arms crossed, she will ask me if I would uncross my arms, because she's very tuned into body language. So we, as parents, can communicate very loudly with our nonverbal cues as well. So being present involves a lot. And I do I can't say that I understand because I've not been in that situation, but I can understand how difficult it would be if you live a life of exhaustion. And let's say in extreme circumstances where you're working three different jobs to try and put food on the table, live in a safe place, take care of your kids. You have to be gone. The kids are coming home on their own. And some extenuating circumstances. It's really, really hard to do that. Moms don't get near the credit that they should. And I think support groups are really important for moms. And that doesn't have to be formal. Every Tuesday night, we're meeting for a mom's group. Friends, sisterhoods. I think that's really important because it takes a village. And if it's a single mom's village, then that's great. It's a single mom village helping each other out.
I think we need to really, you know, get down to our kids' level and talk to them and find out, you know, what they're doing every day and, you know, what happened in school, because I don't think that schools are near as good as they used to be. And I don't think that they're teaching the kids what they need to learn. It's up to us as parents. We are it. It used to be that we also had a lot of religious institutions. So our churches, you know, our kids would get a lot from that. I know I went to Catholic school and I definitely, you know, had a community of people at my school, as well as at home and as well as at my church. A lot of kids don't have that anymore. They're really left out on their own, which is why they get into gangs, because people are just social beings. So we need to give our kids that gift of our time and our interest and our total attention to what they're doing and what they're thinking, and also give them, you know, foundation in the way of healthy discipline. I'm not talking about beating your kids, because that's absolutely not what I would ever do, but teaching them, you know, the values and ethics, and teaching them about, you know, how to treat the police and that they're your friends, not your enemies, and how to treat other people and how to expect to be treated themselves. All of these things, you know, end up having an adult that's well-rounded and well-grounded. And these are people that can keep America going, rather than, you know, kind of what we're getting now with all the drugs flowing over the border. And we have 100,000 fentanyl deaths of 18 to 45 year olds. I mean, who's going to be here for us? We need to be directing our kids when they're young. I want to talk about real quick. There was an article that I just loved about a five-year-old's advice to his mom. So let's forget our advice to our kids, but here's the five-year-old's advice to his mom. And you know what's great about this is you can tell that this child has learned from his mom, who, you know, I couldn't tell by the article, but I got the impression that she might be a single mom, but I couldn't really tell. But either way, this mom, whose name is Gwyneth Toadbush, she was going to go to a meeting and she was nervous about going. It was a teacher parent conference. And so her son gave her some advice, which was really cute. And he said to his mom, so the mom said she has a meeting today. She's a little nervous about it. And this little five-year-old said, Mama, I'm nervous all the time. I know what to do. So here's some of his advice. He said, don't get distracted and your feet will stay on the sidewalk and not too full of snow. And you got to take a deep breath and you got to do it again. And I just thought, you know, that's just so insightful for a little kid. It's like something I would say to my kids, right?
And obviously he picked that up from his mom. So, you know, he didn't just get that out of nowhere. He's kind of parroting probably what he has heard also when she's given him advice on what to do. I think that was adorable. And yeah. Too cute. And so true. You know, start teaching your kids when they're young how to handle a difficult situation. Start modeling for them, you know, what you would expect of them if they, you know, when they get into trouble and how they should handle situations when they get older. It really does start with, you know, when the kids are little. You can't just once your child, I feel like once they're in middle school, you know, you kind of, I don't know, I guess we have 18 years, you know, before they leave the house, you know, so to speak, but it just seems like by the time they hit middle school, they are so influenced by outside what's going on around them, as opposed to what's going on inside their house. And you really got to get it into them real, real clear when they're young.
Yeah. Becky, I have one for you.
Yeah.
So one of the things that one of the pieces of advice he gave his mom was never put a skunk on a bus. And think about that. Yeah, because you can't get away from it. But the one that I really loved the most was, and this is from a five-year-old, think about this. He said, you got to say your affirmations in your mouth and your heart. You say, I am brave of this meeting. I am loved. I smell good. And you can say 5 or 3 or 10 until you know it.
I read that and I thought, you know what? There is a lot of wisdom in that little boy. Even as much as mom has probably verbally fed him all of that, that's a very wise thing for a little one to be able to, even if it's parenting, to be able to share that with his mom. He saw a need and he helped. And that's what his mom has taught him. I am very exceptionally blessed with an incredible mother who is 83 years young and doing great. And when I was a little girl, we lived in a small town in the middle of Michigan. And my mother was always one who would bake cookies and take them to people in need. And sometimes just to neighbors to be nice. And there was one, at that time, I thought little old lady, she's probably my age, I don't know, but an older woman, single, living alone. And she had no vehicle, didn't drive. And so we would occasionally see Mrs. Barron, that was her name, walking to and from a grocery store with a bag of groceries. And where she lived, it was a very long walk in any kind of weather. And if my mother and I were out driving to the grocery store or something, we would see her and stop and pick her up and take her home and help her unload the grocery sometimes. Or just if my mom made a plate of cookies, we would walk several blocks down to where she lived and take them to her. And it really taught me, I mean, those moments are ingrained in my memory forever and led me to want to do similar things. I've taken our neighbors here. We've only lived in this neighborhood 2 years. And when I make excessive carrot cake or something, I'll wrap it up and take it next door. Giving to people, thinking outside of yourself, that's something for me anyway, was just taught in our family. I don't know if that's happening so much anymore, but it is so important for this current generation to understand it's not about me. They need to look outside of me.
I'm going to leave everybody with one final thought on this. So little Clark, his last thing he said, he happens to be a fan of Dolly Parton. Don't ask me how, but he is. And so he told his mom, you got to walk big. You got to mean it, like Dolly on a dinosaur, because you got it. I bet that mom went into that meeting and just rocked it. Don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
So sweet.
Well, ladies, that's a wrap. One more step for womankind.